Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Cabot Creamery, celebrating 100 years of being a dairy farm family-owned cooperative. Learn more at cabotcheese.coop. That's cabotcheese.coop. This week on a special bonus episode of Meat in 3, we find out why the bacon, egg, and cheese, that classic bodega sandwich, is popping up on menus of New York's trendiest restaurants.
We did a few iterations of it, and I was trying to fancify it. We tried the sausage, egg, and cheese, and then we tried to put shermoula sauce on it. We used feta cheese, and we're just like taking ingredients of the Mediterranean, if you will, and try to infuse it. But for me, it was like a car wreck.
Tune in to hear about the wild journey of the bacon, egg, and cheese, from deli to fine dining, on Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is Diane Stemple on Cutting the Curd on Heritage Radio Network. Today, I am interviewing Thalassa Skinner about her new book called Cheese Boards to Share. Welcome, Thalassa.
It's so nice to be here.
Oh, good, good. I'm so delighted with your book.
Well, that makes two of us. Thank you very much.
Yes, you must be glad it's over also, I presume.
You know, it wasn't a hardship. It didn't feel onerous.
Good.
There were parts of it that were, but the actual writing part was, it flowed.
Yes.
I've been talking cheese for a long time. So
yes,
I
can
put
imagine.
It into writing work.
Yes, yes. I have many questions about how exactly you did that. Now, the secondary title to your book is How to Create a Stunning Cheese Board for Any Occasion. So that's certainly covered well in the book.
Thank you.
But
I'm glad you approve.
My first question is, how do you ever decide what to put where?
You mean what cheeses to put on what plates?
Yes. Like, I mean, there's just so many to choose from.
That's very true. So the answer to that is, that's with my cheesemonger hat on.
Uh-huh,
so, you
right.
know, my whole, you know, real history with cheese, apart from writing about cheese, is selling cheese. And
mm-hmm.
also, even before that, I sold cheese, but then I ran farmers markets, and
mm-hmm.
there were always cheesemakers in that. So there's a lot of contact that way, but what that does is kind of put me in a place.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, whenever I think about cheese and advising people on what potentially to have, I think of where they are, and I had to situate myself when I did this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in a long-winded answer to your question, I did most of my cheese work in California,
mm-hmm.
but it was in Northern California. This book, the photography, the styling and photography was actually done in L.A.
Oh, okay.
So that was a first conundrum for
okay.
me because, but I had a little bit of knowledge of it, and I also reached out to people I knew who were cheesemongers or cheese shop owners in the LA area.
Mm-hmm.
And they helped guide mm-hmm. me, mm-hmm. And that helped with what was available.
Right, right.
But then, you know, I kind of had to step back and realize that this is a nationally distributed book.
Right.
So I did that. And thought about East Coast, which I'm now very quite familiar with because I'm living in New England,
mm-hmm.
and also have been to New York a bunch of times. But then I was the publisher is actually from England, so I thought about that, and you know was asked to really consider the whole European market.
Yes, yes.
Heavily.
Well, you do an excellent job of including England.
I did not do it alone.
I think England is more represented than I think I've ever seen in a book.
Well, that has everything to do with, yet again, having
yes.
people in the right places who could help out.
Right,
so,
right.
And they were very clear they wanted that. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and so, you know, I talked about it. I had long conversations, and I relied on Nick Bain, who
yes.
was from
I
New
know
York,
him.
And he's now from yes, right. So he's over in England working
right.
in cheese. So I'm like, help me out, man.
And you knew him. You already knew him?
Oh yeah, no, I know Nick quite well.
Yeah.
So the cheese community is very tight,
and it's not that big. It's easy to know people all over.
It is, and that's the beauty of it. And we do actually help each other out all the
yes,
time.
Yes,
so
I do agree.
Part of why I love the industry,
mm-hmm.
as
mm-hmm.
much as I adore cheese, I also love the people.
Right.
So,
right.
you know.
Now, I thought the book had some very good questions at the start of how many people are you serving, when are you serving it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was...
My gosh, you read it. I'm so proud of you. Thank you for reading.
you're very welcome. I have to read. Yes. No, I read. But then, how many cheese boards have you served in your home? 0, 10, 20, all 25? Like,
well,
previously
I mean,
or when developing the book?
I think that I've been doing cheese boards since I was in college.
Yeah.
Which is only a few years ago, I might add.
Of course.
But no, I actually did start. Serving cheese and wine. I remember in university, I actually my friends who are still mm-hmm. part of my life
mm-hmm.
remember me doing this, and I don't know what got into my very bold, brazen mind when
mm-hmm.
everyone was drinking kegs, you know, in stairways. I was
right.
like, come on, let's let me get some bottles of wine, and I'm going to do a cheese and wine pairing for you. And they're like, who are you, and why do we want to know you? I have no idea. But I was like, you know, this tastes good, and this is great, and we need to do more. So
so you were an early wine drinker.
Oh, yeah. Well, my father is Australian, and I grew up drinking wine.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think from age 7 on, I pretty much had wine.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to... a sabbatical. My mother did a sabbatical semester at Cornell up mm-hmm. in the Finger Lakes, and I remember visiting. I was living with Dad at home, and we'd go up and visit, and we went wine tasting. And I was 11, and
mm-hmm.
I think I bought bottles. I mean, like they helped me buy bottles so I could put down for like 10 years
until you were old enough to drink them.
Well, I think I could have drunk them and Dad wouldn't have said anything. But, you know, back then,
right.
you always bought wine to put down. You didn't just buy it and drink it.
Oh, you now that's a phrase I haven't heard, to put down.
Yes, you cellar it, right? So you write on it and say, uh-huh. okay, this wine, I bought this date, and then
right.
in it's try in 5 years. You get, like,
uh-huh.
you know, 6 bottles,
uh-huh.
and then you... And then you realize in 5 years it's still too young, so you try another one in another 5 years, and then.
Now, do you think put down is an Australian term?
Put it down. I it could be. I don't know.
I'm not familiar with it. And there's another term that you use in the book that I can't recall right now, but it's in my questions that you also use. That I didn't realize where it was from, but maybe it's Australian.
It could be. Well, putting it down means kind of putting it to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like putting it down in your cellar.
Mm-hmm.
And but it could be. I don't know. It's just part of who I am, you know.
Okay. Now, how many of the cheesemakers do you know?
A lot.
Yeah.
Did
you find yourself trying not to favor the ones you knew?
I think there's just enough diversity so that I didn't really have to do that. It's a great question. One of the problems in terms of, you know, there are areas like New York City where you can get such a massively wide range of things that you could put everything down. But the fact of the matter is that distribution is excellent and better than it's ever been, but you still can't get a bunch of these if you are, you know, in particular locations in the center or, you know, like far-reaching places.
Right. So or I the really smaller cheesemakers in California stay in California, and the smaller ones here stay here.
It's exactly right. And, I mean, you can't get them. So I was trying hard to
include everybody.
Include everyone, and then say enough about it so that there was a reason why I chose it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a again with the cheesemonger hat on, which is if someone comes to me and I don't have that cheese, I don't want them to be disappointed, nor do I want them to just walk out the door. I want to say, well, here's what that cheese is.
Right.
And here's what
something,
I have.
Right. Here's something similar.
Right. And you know, the whole point of both loving cheese and its diversity is that you have that knowledge and ability to turn people on to things much wider than the one thing that they came in for.
Right.
And that's also the case with wine and beer and cider and food in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now,
so,
do you feel you somewhat preferred American over European in the book?
It's a big question. No,
well, I was counting.
Did you? Oh, okay.
So
you'll
did
have to tell me then.
You did a bit. I mean, you know, sometimes you went European totally, but not often. And usually it was two Americans to one European.
Okay, well,
which is, you know, it used to be harder to do that.
Yes. Well, I know, you know,
10 years ago.
Much more than that, even. I mean, it was when I first got into cheese, which was 95, 96, in Boston. You know, most of the cheeses were from Europe.
Yes.
And you know, I think that a lot of things have played into why, you know, I probably do think American, and the fact is that I did run farmers markets, and I still am a big proponent of that. So you know, food miles and things like that do matter. But that said, you know, there are cheeses that I absolutely can't live without, and they are European. So it would be very hard for me to write without any mention of European cheeses. I mean, I can do it.
Yes,
but
I agree.
I think everybody likes a whole gamut of things, and we still do reference the motherland, basically, when we talk about cheese. So I think it would be hard.
Yeah. Now, where do you usually shop for cheese in your various locations?
Well, it's a very good question. Again, I have been spending a lot of time in Rhode Island, Rhode Island doesn't have a lot of cheese shops, so that are independent. And but I have found Whole Foods to be terrific, and so that has been where I have been shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, of course, talked directly to some distributors when I've been teaching a bit at Johnson & Wales, and which is a culinary school, and they work with several distributors. So I've been trying to bring that into the curriculum a little bit. So there's some cheese love going on with the chefs, the aspiring chefs. And you know, the other place I've been mainly now is New Haven. And there was a great cheese shop right at the end of the street, but it closed. Casey's closed.
Oh,
I know. Really good friends of mine too. I know, and I used to work through the holidays with them. So, So you know, I think that my answer to that would be wherever I can find good cheese.
Okay.
So I hunted out.
I do find Whole Foods is better when there's nothing else around. I mean, maybe I don't know whether it's actually better or you just think it's better, but it's more essential when it's the only show in town.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what I do know is that it's busy, and so product moves.
Right.
And that is always
that's key,
vitally important. So I would love to see more cheese happening in Rhode Island for sure. And I haven't been able to travel a lot because I'm mainly in Connecticut for personal reasons. And so Connecticut meaning New Haven, but there are such great shops around here. And then sometimes I get lucky and I can go into New York and then I'm just a kid in a candy store. So
now, did you plan ahead? Or this is about the recipes. Did you invent the recipes? Are they yours or others? And did you plan ahead or cook for the photo shoot?
Okay. So the recipes are not mine. And the person who did the recipes, who pulled on other inspirations, so books in particular, and then a few chefs, is actually Valerie, who is, Val is the stylist. So she actually did them made them. So I can take absolutely no credit for any of that. Much as I'd like to.
Now, let me just tell people about the format. You have an assortment of... Well, you have about 25 cheese boards, and then you have things to bring in with them. And is that the term you use, bring in?
I don't know.
Okay.
You mean
that's
bring
how,
in?
Yes. You use something that is not totally common to me. But anyway, so you bring
Are you
in.
Trying to tell me that I speak wrong?
No. I think it's your history.
Okay, fair enough.
And then you make, there's a recipe per cheese board to make and add to it. So that's just for the listeners who have not seen the book yet. That's, you know, there's a recipe per cheese board that look quite delicious.
Yeah, I mean, they are things after my own heart, really, because most of them are nuts and
olives,
fruit bases,
nuts, pastes. Yeah, they seem like a very good addition.
They're great addition, and you know, for me, and it actually, I just reread part of my intro when knowing that we were going to be chatting about this, and the thing I do know too is that there's so many great there's so many great accompaniments out there on the market as well. So, and I'm not, there was a time when I used to cook a lot more than I do now. So I'm really appreciative of what else is out there. But I know, having, you know, done culture and the magazine, and also just being in publishing in general, that recipes are so exciting for people. So these really pleased me, and I was excited. But I'm also like, don't worry if you don't want to do it. You can just buy something.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is quite clear. Like, you don't have to feel burdened by the recipes, and you can find enough stuff to go with it. And yeah, you can just have your cheese board. So anyway, it's time to take a break. We'll be right back after the break.
Cabot Creamery is proud to be celebrating 100 years making the world's finest dairy products. Cabot's award-winning cheddars and other dairy products stand apart because of their farmers' tireless dedication to quality and freshness, to healthy land and a sustainable future. A century after they started this journey, Cabot's farmer owners still know what matters most: family and community. The simple truth that we're stronger together than we are apart. That delicious products are the reward of a job well done. That when you love what you do this much, the best is always still to come.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe. Taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
Hi, we're back, and it's a great idea to go to the Heritage Radio Network Gala. I'll be there. Most of the hosts will be there, and all of our team, and it's really fun, and I heartily encourage you. Anyway, so Lasa, back to you.
And I'll be there.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Yay.
Oh, I'm delighted. Well, my first question is, let's get specific. I want to know your thoughts about beer and cheese, because I am a beer lover. And I'm a new beer lover. Like, I fell in love with it about 4 years ago.
Oh, well, I think you're probably, you know, following the trajectory of just really innovative, fantastic things going on and are available.
Yes, yes.
and I'm with you 100%.
Oh, are you? So have you diverged from wine a bit?
No, I still drink a lot of wine. I'm Australian. We drink everything for crying out loud.
Okay. Isn't there
beer?
Why
we come up with weird words.
Isn't there beer in Australia?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of craft beer.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to know, what made you put Humboldt Fog with wheat beer? That's question number one.
Okay. Well, it's a very luscious, kind of velvety, softer taste and flavor, so that beautiful texture, kind of like souffle almost, and then this, you know, it wants something gentle with it, and and also I will say that I did a lot of things are tried and true in this, and I don't ever do things thinking I know everything. I do ask around. So a lot of people who are in cheese are really, really aficionados of craft brewing.
Yes.
And so I asked, and that came up.
Okay.
So, you know, these things are very clearly...
It was voted upon.
It was voted upon, exactly. and I think, you know, when you do any kind of pairing, you're very much thinking in terms of intensities and mm-hmm. textures. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those okay. that I think.
Now, I was also wondering about the mature cloth-bound cheddar with IPA, because IPAs are my favorite beers, and I don't know if I would pair it with cloth-bound cheddar. I don't drink beer and eat cheese that much.
Well, I think you have to try it before we have another talk about it. But I would say that if you're thinking in terms of a mature, you know, a cheddar that's more a block cheddar with uh-huh. a higher acidity, then you're probably correct. But if you think of a cloth bound,
which is
with
mellower.
Age on it, mm-hmm. much mellower, but also more, it's got many more kind of earthy, often, you know, that kind of almost peanut buttery kind of undertones to it. Right. Those are things that actually match the intensity, but raise IPA one or two. Mm-hmm. And so it can be pretty wonderful. Okay. So I encourage you to try it.
I will. Now, I want to discuss the cider choices.
Well, that's my, I have had a much bigger love recently, just like you have for beer, but with cider.
So you've fallen in love with cider?
I do love cider.
Did you always, or is it a new love?
It's a newer love, but I have always been very excited about British and I think, again, that has something to do with Australian roots, because we did get things like Bulmers and Woodpecker when we were younger. So, yeah, we had it in our life.
So it came all the way over to Australia because it's more British.
Heavily British influence there.
But now, when I read that your first pairing is with British-style cider, I thought, well, what is British-style cider? I didn't even know.
Well, in the definition that I give it, it's more fruit-forward.
Okay.
It's not funky. It's like a saison or whatever. It's got a good apple. Mm-hmm. And it is a solid
fruit.
Solid fruit, right?
Okay.
So you and it's hard to not think that goes well with cheese. An apple and cheese, for crying out loud, that's going to work, you know.
Now, another thing, so then you put camembert with French farmhouse cider. What is French farmhouse cider?
So it's a little it's got a little more funkiness to it.
Okay.
Still has quite a bit of the apple. But, I mean, that is a pairing in place, really, because you're looking at Normandy. And they are known for, if you're really buying a true French farmhouse cider, it's invariably going to be coming from Normandy. That camembert is invariably going to be coming from Normandy as well. So it's got both of them have a bit of funk. They've both got the earth, and then they've got you've got the nice fruit coming, but you've got that other element going on with it. So it's pretty wonderful.
I will have to branch out, clearly. So
that's my point.
Another thing, that this is just a funny aside, you mentioned fromage d'Auvergne next, I think, with champenoise, whatever that's pronounced.
Method champenoise.
Yeah. So you call it an absolute crowd pleaser, the fromage d'Auvergne. And I just want to let you know that it's a secret favorite of a lot of cheesemongers who don't want to admit it because it's too industrial. It's an industrial cheese that we all love.
but it has been, I think also it has this 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 technique, you know, this ultrafiltration that it's gone through, which basically makes it into like a
more serious, a more serious cheese.
Well, I don't know. I don't think cheese is serious. It's cheese, for crying out loud. But I do think it is. It's part of it is the texture, which has so much to do with that process of the ultrafiltration.
And it's reliable. The texture is pretty reliable.
It absolutely is.
And they're not really that reliable. Many French cheeses are not as reliable as fromage d'Auvergne.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I just don't really understand why we have to worry about the size of production. It's okay.
I don't know. You know, we do. What can I say?
Well, I mean, we can love them all. I think you'll see that. I mean, I try very hard to, to not be that way because I feel that one of the reasons that larger production happens is because economically, it keeps many more people being able to farm and to be in production and to have a paycheck and producing something very good. So if you just look at a European model, it keeps entire regions going because they're all producing, you know, one style of cheese, like a Gruyere or a Comté or something of that ilk. So that's where I, you know, I get a little sad.
Oh.
There's a place for everything.
You don't want to leave any of your children behind.
Never, no. I've got to be fair.
Okay. So I love that you paired Pleasant Ridge Reserve with a Manhattan.
Are you a Manhattan drinker?
No, I'm not, but I just loved it. I want to become one.
Well, I think you have lots of things ahead of you for the nice snowy months.
Yes, I think you're right. And I also loved, well, first of all, your lists of substitutions, which are under every cheese in the book, are amazing.
Thank you.
They're just remarkable. And you included, I think, in the Pleasant Ridge department, a Scutney Mountain, which used to be one of my very favorite cheeses from Vermont. I haven't had it as, you know, as often since I stopped working at Murray's, but I loved it. And I actually said when I was going to be a judge at ACS, I had made pronouncements that I was going to make a Scutney Mountain win. And then when it was up for winning, I had to not vote because I felt like I had told too many people that.
Oh. I don't know what to say to that. I really don't.
Right. It was just a quirky thing that a Scutney had done that well. It was up for, you know, it was in the contest for winning.
Right.
And I felt I had made too big a deal of it. That was when you had a co-judge and you only got to vote as a couple.
Oh, and we still have co-judges.
Yeah, but my co-judge voted for a Scutney Mountain.
Okay.
But well, I left him on his own. I left him on his own, but he loved it.
Well, there you have it. Well, I think that style of cheese, which is that, you know, the very cohesive, pliable kind of alpine mountain style cheese it's just hard not to adore it. And the layers of flavor, right?
Yes,
go on in that are wonderful.
Yes.
So sipping a Manhattan along with nibbling on that just seems like a really good night in front of a fire.
Yes, I totally agree. And I did love your drinks, the Dark and Stormy and the grapefruit tequila spritz.
Yeah.
with up and smoke?
You could do so much with that, you know. The hardest part, and I think you're kind of pinpointing it, is narrowing down.
Yes, yes.
Luckily, I didn't have to neglect too much. Mm. And I mean, I really hope I didn't neglect too much. Mm-hmm. I tried to put it out there because so many people love different cheeses and different things. It would be, I wanted to include as much as I could and show the diversity of what's out there.
Yes.
Really.
Well, and that was why your list of substitutions was so excellent. You know, you gave so many choices in the substitution list and so many from England.
Yeah, well, again, that was part of, if this had been a publisher who was solely based in the U.S., I doubt that would have happened. But
right,
the beauty
right.
is
yeah.
that, and to be honest, I really wanted to have international, choices.
Yes,
so,
yes. And you do, but you don't have that many Italian or Portuguese, you know, you don't go south very much because you stay north.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
It's just not that easy to get many of those.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
is, it's partially that, I mean, I do try to have Spain, quite a bit from Spain. And of course I have a couple from Portugal, but you're right about that. And I did put a couple of kind of Latin American cheeses in, even if they were American, because we just don't get them. And, Canadian cheeses, there were a few mentioned.
Yes, yes, I did notice that as well. Yeah.
But that's really because there are going to be Canadian readers and not because we can get them in our country, in the U.S.
So did you try to include a lot of Canadian substitutions?
Not a lot, but as many as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And, otherwise, I would get in trouble because I only have so many words I can jam into a book, right?
Now that's, you put cutting the curd in the book.
Yeah.
I was so pleased at the end of the book is things to read up on, and you put the show. It's,
the
first time.
It's a great way to learn, and I think it makes it approachable to people. You have people on that are just, that we all love to hear.
Yes,
not just me, I'm saying, but I mean, the people who are scientists or chefs and of course, mongers, but makers, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
yes.
a great way to learn.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Of course you should be in there.
Well, I don't think we ever have been in the book, and I was very excited to see it.
Well, there you go.
Now, another thing, the pictures.
Yeah.
Now, I want to say you have 4 pictures per cheese board, maybe?
Yeah, that's roughly about it.
3 to 5, I'd say. You know, sometimes it's a few. And you also did the very excellent thing for people who don't know cheese. You have a little way to tell which cheese is which with the A, B, C, D.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
that's
is
important.
Excellent.
Incredibly important.
Because and, I usually knew them, but I didn't even know all of them.
Well, I mean, it's a lot to know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cheese in here.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because when I signed up to do the book, with Ryland Peters, and they actually had already decided, this is going to happen, this is what it's going to be. But I put together kind of the concept and that. And then they said, well, this is who we'd like to work with, and photography. And I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. It's in L.A. I'm over here in New England. That's a long way. So I had to kind of think about how that would happen, and also make sure that the diversity of cheeses were there, but even more importantly, make sure that they knew what cheese to be using with what.
Right.
So it became really, this is how cheese people think, right? It's like, well, it's great to have a ton of cheeses, but I can assure you that you're going to get confused very quickly about what it is that you're shooting.
Yes.
So I did pull on a couple of very dear friends who are in cheese. Erin Clancy, who really helped with some of, you know, making sure that things were structured. So I would be like, okay, this is what the board's going to be, and this is being used there. Mm-hmm. And then she was like my little
assistant.
You know, yeah, really
checker.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Checker and just organizer behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And then Lydia Clark, Lydia and Marnie, who own DTLA and Claremont Cheese out in L.A., I got in touch with them and said to Lydia, well, you know, when Val is picking things up, you can maybe just say if she wants you, maybe you'll come by just to make sure things are in the right place and all of that. So it takes a team. It takes a village, as it were, to do it all. But the whole point was to make it as easy for people who are reading as possible. I didn't want to create a book that you could look at something and you're like, oh, it's great, but I can't do that. And I can't get any of those things. Mm-hmm. So I tried really hard to be as inclusive to as many readers as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that the photography is so delicious.
Yes.
You really just want to try it.
Oh, yes. It was very tough not to eat cheese while you were reading the book. I had to go into my refrigerator on many, many occasions and eat some.
But you didn't make yourself a Manhattan. So,
no,
you know.
I did not. I don't have the ingredients.
That's funny.
Yeah, I did drink a little beer. But I noticed, and I thought this was unusual, you have repeated pictures of the cheese boards. Is that, did you have a giant budget? And needed to do more pictures? I mean, I'm under the impression that photos are expensive.
I can't really answer that.
Okay.
The only reason I can't answer that is because I don't know.
You don't know.
That was a publisher's decision.
Okay.
And I think that what we love about cheese is
seeing it.
So you'd be crazy if you did a book like this, and even if I'm the most beautiful writer, it does not entice people to read as much as it does by seeing.
Right.
So,
right.
You're right. It is a lot, and I think that, you know, the first thing that you do when you work in food, or especially if you are trying to convey food to someone, is to let them read, see with their eyes.
Yes, yes.
So I think that's really where they are with this.
Yeah.
And this same publisher has done a number of books, food-related books, and they're always very heavy
In photos.
Photography.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I had a question. You said it was being done before the holidays. Was that last year?
No.
Photos.
Actually, it was after the holidays.
Oh, okay.
It was directly after the holidays.
Oh, okay. In 19, this year?
This year, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there a rush to get it out before Christmas?
No.
Okay.
No. Oh, you mean for this book now?
Yeah, yeah. So people could buy it for presents.
I don't think it's a rush. I mean, it came out not very long ago.
Right.
And
right.
The timing is definitely good for that.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think the answer to your question is it was the writing and then the shooting of it. So the writing started in last autumn.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual photo shoots were right after the new year.
Okay.
So in this year.
Okay.
And then I completed the writing, which was a lot of the real detailed, kind of work.
The lists of extras.
The copy editing all of that kind of thing, which make it, really usable.
Mm-hmm.
And then to actually print and do it all takes several months. So you're always looking far out.
Right.
And then I knew it would be out by the end of September.
Okay.
And it was. So it's here.
Okay. It's here. And it's very attractive. And it makes you very hungry.
And I have a few, events kind of coming up that are good in New York.
Oh, that support it.
Yes, support it, and just make sure that I can honor some of the cheese people that are that's focused on too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be at the French Cheese Board on the 29th of October, and I'll be doing an event actually at the Cider House in Brooklyn.
Oh, cool.
But I don't have a date yet, but it's coming up.
Oh,
I want
to come.
Oh, you'll be invited. Don't you worry. It'll be in December.
Oh, good.
So there's a lot. There's a lot that goes along with creating something like this.
Yes, yes. Okay, well, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been delightful discussing your new book, Cheese Boards to Share. And thank you so much, Lasa Skinner.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Great.
Now go make yourself a Manhattan.
Okay. Right away.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Cheese. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradio.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.